You're listening to Future Thinking from Stylists, the show where our analysts, alongside industry thought leaders, unpack the big trends you need to know about. Find out more about what the future holds for your business at stylists.com.
Hello, and welcome to Future Thinking from Stylists. I'm your host, Leila Petra. In today's episode, joining me and Stylists' Head of Multimedia, Christian Ward, I spoke to Annie Corsa, Stylists' Senior Editor of Pop Culture and Media, and Julia Ahrens, Senior Pop Culture Correspondent, to discuss the key trends and insights that emerged from this year's South by Southwest Festival. So what were some of the stand-up panels that you both attended this year?
So a panel that I can't really stop thinking about was called The Economy of Algorithms, AI and the Rise of Digital Minions. So here, someone called Professor Marek Kowalkiewicz offered a really refreshing side angle into AI. So his focus was to remind us how long our lives have been already ruled by AI in the shape of algorithmic suggestion. So he asked us to consider what happens when algorithms take over and said that perhaps we should assume that they have already. He said that they've developed so much agency that we need a new language to describe their influence and we need to work out how to communicate with them. But mostly he discussed an idea that I'm really fascinated with, which is what we think our taste is now. So in music, influencers, TV, clothes, is actually just what an algorithm has decided for us a few steps back, a few months back, potentially a few years back. And if that's the case, how do we push against this? How do we reassert our agency? How do we allow and facilitate brands to connect with our real choices rather than our algorithmed selves? He also talked about how generative AI will create this sort of bot will eat itself effect. So generative AI is going to start to be trained on content produced by generative AI. So it's going to cannibalize itself, resulting in an internet that's already actually filling up with really bizarre, nonsensical content that only a bot could love.
I am interested in that idea that algorithms are defining our taste, but did you go into a bit more detail about why he thinks that? How does that work?
It can be as simple as people have been setting up bots to push books on Amazon for as long as Amazon's been around. So what we think is the bestseller has been doctored and manipulated for quite a long time. And now this is so embedded in culture that we've come quite far from being able to make choices that aren't in some way informed by these algorithms. So divorcing the algorithms from culture, his point was that you can't divorce algorithms from how culture is built and how we judge it.
What about you, Julia? What was standout panels for you?
As somebody who has a lifelong history of self-medicating with media, which I think is just a pathologizing way of saying I like to spend a Friday night binging a TV show. I had a really great panel on how video games can be used to treat mental health. It was led by Ryan Douglas, who's one of the co-founders of a therapeutic gaming studio called Deepwell DTX that we've written about previously. And he shared some really great research data. I think a couple of people will have heard the fact that Tetris can actually be really useful in PTSD treatment, because these sort of side-to-side eye movements that you use when you play Tetris, like akin to what you do when you do EDMR therapy, which helps the brain process traumatic memories. But then apparently it also turns out that more recently there was a trial study, I want to say in Sweden, where it has been shown that Plants vs. Zombies, the mobile game, is showing really good impact for people with treatment-resistant depression and anxiety symptoms. And so this entire concept of, I think, looking into the content that people maybe instinctually have consumed to help themselves do better mentally, and I think we may have assumed was more of an escapist reaction, and now finding that there's real therapeutic value in entertaining experience, I think is super exciting for the sort of future of more well-curated entertainment consumption, especially as we begin to talk about whether the machines are curating our tastes. So when that happens, is there something we can do to still defend our own mental balance?
When we talked to you guys coming back from South by Southwest last year, obviously the main topic on everyone's mind was AI. And I'm wondering what the attitudes are this year and what has changed from that. I'm gathering more of a positive outlook at the moment versus that prevalent, say, more cautionary approach.
There was definitely a shift. So last year, which took place about 4 months after the release of ChatGPT, I actually felt a slight mania, definitely this urgency to make AI the center of your business. It's got to be the center of your brand. It's got to be the center of your customer offer. It felt very much like a race had started and the newcomers were ahead of the bigger tech players. And it felt like everything was a bit topsy-turvy. And there was anxiety about that, but there was also a lot of quite nervous energy. So this year, I would say there was temperance. So there's context generative AI now. We've seen it exist in the world. We've seen what it can do. There's been a lot of trial and error. There's also consensus about its limitations, as in the limitations that audiences that we would like to put in place. I think that's starting to take shape. So the result was a lot more focus on specifics. So the details of how AI tools have and are going to change creative industries especially was prevalent, rather than the sort of slightly overzealous grand statements that were everywhere last year about AI changing the world, but without much detail about how, which has created that nervous energy. There's also a lot of determination to write humans back in. So panels on creative AI tools in video production, music making, visual art, they all really insisted and like repeatedly insisted on the absolute necessity of human skill. I think every single panel I went to on AI said AI it will make terrible art unless a human is part of it. And actually, a lot of panelists claimed that the emergence of generative AI is an opportunity to re-platform and celebrate human process and ingenuity. So we shouldn't be praying to the AI gods. This is a moment to really clarify and be glad about what humans can achieve. But there was contextual anxiety as well. So there's obviously been an event in America. There were lots of panels on the effect of generative AI on journalism and news media, obviously with the US presidential election happening this year. There are global impacts there because millions of people are going to the polls this year. The mood was, in a word, anxious, I think. The concept of fake news has taken on a new potency. It was balanced with some optimism about how AI can be used to aid and strengthen journalism. So there was a great talk about how AI can be trained to spot patterns and anomalies in vast amounts of data. So being able to do things that human journalists cannot do, and then add this AI analysis, this sort of non-human analysis next to human critical thinking, and that can really strengthen journalism. But one major implication that's actually something I can't stop thinking about, and it's been mind-bending. Now that we've got the tools to fake everything, anyone can claim that anything and everything is fake. So there's a lot of worry about it fabricating news, fake images, or fake audio, but it goes the other way too. You can discredit news now when everything potentially is AI generated. And truth just disintegrates in the face of this. So tackling that felt like the biggest challenge that was being grappled with this year, I think.
Were there any conversations just off that about setting those parameters and those guidelines? And how is it that we can actually get away from everything, like you said, being called fake?
Yeah, I think a big one was media literacy that stretches from newsrooms to the public. So training journalists to deal with this, not just to spot them, but to come up with the language and the right approach to teaching people how to spot them as well. They said that when something like the Kate Middleton photo, which wasn't AI doctored, but created this huge sort of furore about it, that's an opportunity to teach people about how to spot fakery in images. So there's a lot about media literacy. There are also serious regulatory initiatives emerging. C2PA is one of the big ones, which is broadening out this idea of codes of conduct with AI. And one thing that they've helped roll out is something called content credentials, which Adobe is adopting, Microsoft is soon to adopt, where you can now embed in metadata all the details of how a photo has come to exist in this current form. You can track back to its original versions. So it's adding provenance. It's building a new framework for provenance in this new era. And it's about encouraging adoption there, hopefully removing some of the fear and making people feel more prepared to deal with this stuff. But there was a sense that we don't yet know how bad this is going to be. It feels like the US election might be the moment where we understand how significant these tools are going to be in major political moments.
Even like on a less high stakes scenario, I think we've been seeing a lot of chatter recently of concerned millennials and Gen Z looking at their boomer parents' Facebook feeds and them just interacting with post after post of AI generated, or this small lad built this beautiful sandcastle with the St. George's cross on it. Can you give him an upvote? And it's very clearly AI generated imagery, and just lots of people concerned about people who don't necessarily have that sort of literacy being stuck in this cabinet of mirrors that doesn't really include any sort of real human context anymore.
In terms of moving on to what brands were up to this year, I'm wondering what kind of big brand activations you guys saw during the week.
Yeah, really interesting. For the recent decade, really, that we've been to South by Southwest. There had always been lots of big activations for the current big upcoming TV series. Every corner more or less had an opportunity to pop into a little escapist little activation. With the rare exceptions such as Prime's Fallout activation, which also only ran for 2 days and outside of the center, we haven't actually seen so much spectacle and escapism. Most activations were very much grounded in current utility. It was a lot about your classic launch spaces, maybe opportunities to educate people on sustainability efforts. But broadly speaking, it's been a bit subdued on the spectacle side of things at South by Southwest this year.
What about for you, Annie? Was the same sentiment? Or
yeah, I was reminded that last year there was a lot of ta-da moments with AI. Look at this tool. And in fact, a lot of the talk about AI was something that didn't happen at South by Southwest, which was the newly released demos of Sora, the open AI text-to-video generator that has made everyone sort of amazed and deeply nervous at the same time. Yeah, I agree with Julia. I think there was a sense of let's take this stuff seriously. We need to prepare for what feels like a new age, a shift into something quite different. So it felt considered, I think, is probably the word I'd use. There was plenty of music and TV stuff happening. It's Three Body Problem, which is the new program from the makers of Game of Thrones, did a slightly mad hologram thing in the sky to market the release of that Netflix show. But those were all fairly just big flashy things rather than any of those big moments of look at this new tech, this is going to change your life. I think that's maybe not what South by Southwest is anymore. There's a sort of academic side to it, and then there's an experience side to it.
More from Annie and Julie in a moment. But just a quick pause to say that for our members, you can find our two full-length reports covering this year's South by Southwest Festival on the site and a new South by Southwest pop culture trend drop from Julia on our TikTok channel at We Are Stylists. And if you're not already a member and would like to find out how access to stylists could benefit your business, email innovation@stylist.com or visit www.stylist.com/membership. Now back to my interview with Annie and Julia. You touched upon flashy examples of AI versus actual concrete, this will change our live moments. What do you think the implications of that is for our listeners? I think whether that's on a brand or individual level.
There are two things that I think. One is a bit, it's in the very early stages, but I think we're going to be talking about it for many years. It's this idea of multimodal AI. So there are lots of phrases bandied about the sort of artificial general intelligence is a big one, but multimodal is something I haven't heard before and I think it was new to a lot of people. So tools like ChatGPT or Midjourney, Sora even, they're single modal. They compute one single type of data and then they produce a single type. So they produce only text, only video, only sound. Multimodal, which it seems to be very much in stealth mode. So there are companies doing it, but very few want to admit to it. Multimodal means an AI model that can generate multiple mediums simultaneously. So you could feasibly generate not only a video, but that video will be complete with full sound design, with AI generated characters performing an AI written script. So in other words, something akin to a full episode of television. So the implications there are huge. And I touched on that in my report. That sort of feels like one of the slightly more prospective ideas that South by is great for. You might not encounter it for another 6 months just doing sort of research, but people there want to prepare you for the new things coming even before they're ready, which is exciting and interesting and, in this case, slightly scary. The other thing, we're talking about guardrails and this sense that we always feel like we're always catching up with AI. It feels like you get used to a tool and then a new one comes out and it's much better and you have to relearn all your entire approach. And there was this sense throughout the conference that people really wanted to ease that sort of overwhelm with some specific solutions to this AI future that we're all in. So one of those is this idea of how to make AI work for artists specifically. So ways that can build guardrails while still embracing the tech. You don't have to be a Luddite in order to deal with this. You can embrace it and still protect yourself and your practice and your job. So Soundfall, which is the AI music making platform that's been all over the news this year, they've launched a feature called Collabs. So music producers sign up to create an AI model, essentially. That AI model is trained specifically on their work, and then users can pay to use that model to produce a song based on the sort of sonic DNA of that producer. That song can then be used on social media. It can't be sold for profit. It's proprietary AI that is really reliant on the artist's permission. It lets them obtain ownership, it lets them make money. And it's a version of integrating AI that doesn't need to mean intellectual property theft, essentially. So I think the thing that was impressed upon me, and I am impressed by, was the fact that the speed of this development that felt really urgent last year and was definitely still there this year, it does seem to be matched, or there's an effort to match that speed with similarly speedy responses to how to make our AI work for us, so solutions to the problems caused by AI. And I think that's why I left feeling, on balance, optimistic.
I think that kind of integration into almost fandom culture, shall we say, where people come together around, say, an artist's work, is a really interesting application and has interesting implications for AI and entertainment. Because I know in many panels that I went to, conversation often turned to the whole concept of ultra-targeted and hyper-personalized content, right? The idea that maybe the 2030 version of Friends will be each episode generated on the spot, specific to that particular viewer's likes, which tropes they love, who's their favorite character, and then they get the most interesting storyline. But then you're just stuck in a cave on your own, just watching the stuff that you watched as hell come from. And that's really boring. And the reason properties become and remain huge is people interacting around them, right? And creating their own songs or writing fanfics. And I think if we use AI generative tools to enable more creativity in the non-commercial but still has commercial value through engagement fandom space, that's going to become much more interesting in the immediate horizon if you give people more specialized and sophisticated abilities to create around a central property and share that with each other. I think that's where the really interesting and also much more ethically and socially defensible application of personalized creation tools comes into play.
That's it for this edition of Future Thinking. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'd love to hear your feedback. On X, we're at @stylist_live, and on Instagram and TikTok, you can find us at @WeAreStylists. See you next time.
You've been listening to Future Thinking from Stylus, the show where our analysts, alongside industry thought leaders, unpack the big trends that you need to know about. Find out more about what the future holds for your business at stylus.com. And if you like what you heard today, make sure you subscribe to Future Thinking in iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts to hear new episodes as soon as they're available.